Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Galilea Resources. Welcome back, Colin. How's things?
Things are good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very good here. We've just got back from a short break. Nice to take a bit of downtime from the markets and reflect on things and spend some good family time on the beach, in the pool, etc., cooling off. It's been a nice break, but it's good to get back to it. And let's hope we see some bit of volume and excitement coming back into the markets, because it's been a pretty torrid 6 to 8 months, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, you two certainly, you know, deserve that break. You've put a lot of time into creating this platform, and it's a well-received platform. And I think it's a rest well-deserved. And I think we're all waiting for that change. But of course, I think your mentality is about the same as the guys in the market who's been around quite a time. That what if you can't make something happen, don't sit there biting your fingernails. Work on what you can make happen. And it's good to see that your platform is growing by the day, and it's a well-listened-to site, and it's an increased interest platform. So, well-deserved break, and let's look forward to a better autumn. I suspect the autumn won't be a lot better than the summer, but I'm looking forward to a good 2023.
Yeah, so obviously we saw some news of like, we were actually offline at the time, but we saw the discovery of nickel targets at the Bulawayo Gold Project in Zimbabwe. Do you want to just talk us how significant that news is?
Could be extremely significant. It's it just shows, you know, that it shows a lot of things that we've talked about before, I think, on podcasts, that we all make the mistake in this business, and it's good to be a miner in the geological world, because, you know, over the years you see these geological maps and they're taken as gospel by geologists, very senior geologists, and reality, we all forget when they were at university in their second year off, they went mapping in these faraway places as part of their summer work, you know, and as part of their course. And what the second year and first year and third year geologists did was essentially produce a map which was certainly open to question, and great big assumptions were made. And I've been so successful in some of the things I've done by sort of throwing the map away. But in this case, there's a little bit of that. There's a bit of concealment. The fact that the 12 and a half, I think it is 13 kilometers of nickel is under the greenstone. We did fly, as you know, we flew through the area. That was our first thing when we got into the Bulawayo, the BC Ventures arrangement. And the first thing we did was fly for that gold. And the gold was certainly extremely successful, as we've announced. And showed us all the trends we expected. Showed us the linkage to structures. But more not more importantly, that is a wrong statement. As importantly, it showed us these ultramafic, deeper seated, not that deep, ultramafic systems, which were quite long. And then you might raise your eyes and, you know, as I've said before, there goes Colin. He's found nickel where nickel's never been found before, when his expression is always, if you're looking for elephants, go looking where elephants have been found before. Well, I'll concede, wasn't looking for nickel, but I'm not at all surprised, because the Shingwani mine is quite close there, and it is a nickel bearing district, and it was a site of an active nickel mine for many years. So I'm very excited about that, because you don't need me to tell you, but I can, you know, miss the opportunity. Nickel is one of tomorrow's metals. Nickel is sitting at very resistant, even more resistant than copper, at around about $21,000 a ton. But not only that, I think the most important thing is that this is sulfide nickel. This is not lateritic. And sadly, around about 60-65% of the world's nickel now is lateritic. And that is tough and expensive and energy demanding to treat, whereas these sulfides are much easier to treat. So, you know, you can imagine that, and the sort of percentage, I think, was about 0.6-0.7% they found in the old days down there. Not, you know, that is not a dripping roast, but that's when you're looking at a nickel price of about $3. When you're looking at a nickel price of $21, despite cost inflation, they are very attractive ore bodies. And if you can find them, they've got a place in tomorrow's mining world. So very exciting, Phil. I'm glad you picked up on that.
And the other thing, which I think there's certainly been a lot of excitement about in the past, which there's not been too many updates on, is the Kalahari Copper Belt licenses and the sort of partnership with Sandfire. Do you want to just talk us through what's going on there?
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? It really is.
It is.
I think, you know, Sandfire, very professional company, very professional. And they're getting on with their work in building that mine. And I believe it starts up in the first half of next year. I don't believe, I'm pretty confident. It starts up in the next part of next year. And they've got a few hundred, if not over 1,000 people out there working to get the mine ready to do all the things, you know, a lot of contractors, engineering contractors out there. And of course, they've not been sidetracked, but their hands are full as well, because they bought that big mine in Spain, paid $1.87 billion for it. And I just admire them because of, you know, that they, in actual fact, were able to raise $1 billion with a market cap of $1 billion to buy that mine, which was one hell of an achievement. And I look at their since they've owned it, their results, they've already added value to their acquisition. So I think what set the cat among the pigeons is the Cobre discovery. It set the cat among the pigeons for two reasons. One, it's drawn focus onto what Sandfire is doing. It's drawn focus into that area because everybody wants to talk about the Sandfire mine and the Cupric Canyon mine as though they're little entities. And let's face it, they're not the world's biggest copper mines. But it's also now drawn attention to the fact we're looking not at a copper mine, we're looking at a copper region, copper district, copper region. And that northern part up into Botswana looks very prolific. And aren't we pleased? Aren't we pleased, Kevin? Or, you know, the ones that we've given to Sandfire to work. And as you know, there's a predetermined exit if it's successful, a maximum of $80 million. And then we've kept licenses ourselves, which, as you look from the Cobre announcement, are pretty well positioned relative to new discoveries. So you can say in Galileo, we've got Sandfire working across. They've got to spend $4 million in 2 years. We're obviously very encouraged about Cupric Canyon. It's nice when somebody else makes discoveries which are in proximity. And it adds an old big story, a big new dimensions to that very good story. And, you know, if you look at Sandfire's base reserve at T3, they will welcome more richer, don't use the word richer, more higher grade material than they've actually got. They're nearer 1% than 2%. Whereas when you get up a little bit further north in the A4s and that, you're getting up towards the 2%. So I think there's not many who has basically got licenses in that vicinity who aren't very pleased with Cobre's discovery. And of course, it enhances the build that Sandfire are doing. So we're all very, very pleased.
While we're on the subject of the Kalahari Copper Belt, you've also got the conglomerate with another one of your companies, African Pioneer, working with them. Do you want to give us a bit of an update on how things are progressing with African Pioneer?
Well, thanks for bringing that up, Phil. You're absolutely right. So for whatever benefit goes to Galileo, there's benefit to African Pioneer because it too is well placed with archive discoveries on one of the licenses. So that too is equally well placed in the conglomerate, the world in the general district, where their mines ready to service with ore. That's Plan B. But you know, in both Galileo and Pioneer, the strike distance, potential strike distances, the potential size of the project, I mean, you know, you're still looking at standalone mines, not necessarily feed for Sandfire or feed for Cupric Canyon. And we don't feel compelled to talk to Cobre either because we've got good standalone positions.
Colin, I'm taking you to a different jurisdiction now in Cyprus for Besant. What's the situation moving forward for Trulli then?
Ah, Trulli is fine. As you know, we've deepened that pit 67 meters. The fault which cut the pit off to make, you know, when in the early days when the pit was designed on the other side of the fault, so as to speak, there's that big oxide gold cap, which is, there's not much copper, or it's generally gold. And then below there, of course, is the copper intercepts, and we're busy establishing a grade tonnage, so we can bring that Trulli into being. So that's the current activities there.
And do you see that happening in the near term?
That's basically part of the Besant program. Yes, that's part of our life. Yeah. absolutely part of my life.
And part of that also was Jubilee in terms of a lot of the work test work that they were doing on Truly. So give us a bit of a feedback on Jubilee. It's taken a bit of a bashing in the last while, which seems rather strange considering it probably has more potential upside and more assets than it has had for quite a while.
Well, you'll realise that I'm no longer chairman of Jubilee. And of course, that forbids me from talking about a company that I'm not actually involved in on a daily basis. But when it comes to bashing, it got bashed. But show me a company what didn't get bashed. I think Galileo managed to be the star performer, but it's come off for no fundamentals. The fundamentals get stronger and the reaction, the fallback is marked. I think Jubilee was probably the same. I see that Jubilee went down to probably just below 12, and I think it's over 13 again. If I look at the market generally, I see real fear now, Kevin. I see real fear. I think on this site, I've talked before about the copper price and the manipulation. And it is absolutely strange to me as a reasonable thinking person that a country which is not known for its humanitarian approach to life manages to lock up half the world, half the country, because of coughing and sneezing. So either they found a brand new virus, which I very much doubt, or they want to stem the demand. They want to stymie the demand for all the metals. They want to make the logjam bigger. And of course, it was reflected in the copper price. No single individual could have done it. No single corporation could have done it. And a country had to try to do it. And I use the word try. Take a visit to the London Metal Exchange warehouse and see where you sit. Inventories ought to be going up a lot. They're not. The copper price got depressed. But gee whiz, it's still, if you look at a 5-year period, it's still quite a good copper price. Electric vehicles are here to stay. Every time I watch the telly, I see a new advert about BMW Star EV. It's all got to happen. It's all got to happen, Kevin. And the tragedy is, and the Anglo-American, the new chief executive of Anglo-American, he's pointed it out, and he's only been in that job for a few weeks. But he's pointed it out in two major interviews that this demand for copper is going to put a strain on the copper producers. So we're into real artificial times. There's nothing artificial about shells around your house. That's real, you know? And so sorry.
You said it on here a number of months ago, maybe 8-9 months ago, that we might see copper again at $7,000-$8,000 per ton. And we have. And that's probably where we're sitting right now. But actually, it's artificial, because if the real demand came in for what is required, then the price soars.
You tell me what next, Kevin. I mean,
well,
you know,
it's the same with the US dollar, isn't it? I mean, the US dollar is at a 20-year high, artificially high, because they're printing money like it's going out of fashion in the United States of America. And yet, the US dollar is as high as it's been in 20 years. That makes absolutely zero sense to the world. And I mean, the gold price, even because it's dollar denominated, the gold price has actually been increasing in value all around the world, except for in the US, because the dollar's been so strong. So it's a weird situation that we're in at the minute, and it will unfold. It has to unfold.
Yeah. I use the word artificial. As you say, some of these things move in opposite directions to one another. Peter pays Paul. But where we are now, we don't know where we are now. If you want Colin Bird's summary, and I'm a mining engineer and not an economist, but I still think a lot of the inflation is due to the logjam, discontinuity of supplies, imbalance of supplies. You cannot deny in Europe the energy crisis, which is on its way, and what that will do to everybody's pockets. You cannot deny that, but that is single event dominated. And you know, if you believe in Armageddon, then let's all fold up and go home. And dig our holes, so to speak. If you believe in tomorrow's world like I do, if you're the optimist like I am for the kids and a better world and a cleaner world, then let's start investing in copper. And that takes copper to a platform of $9,000 in my eyes. But you know, the short-term headwinds, boy, you know, I mean, it's like the Boeing 747 going into a massive 30 thunderstorm at 38,000 feet with no, you know, it's too big to go either side. It's got to drive through it. I look in front of myself. I don't see the inflation noise dying. I don't see an immediate solution to the Ukraine war. I don't see an immediate solution to the standoff between Europe and Russia about the gas. And yet I see all these commodity prices. They're still not bad with so much wind against them. So much wind against them. So in my space, I have to stay and will stay as the eternal optimist.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that no matter what happens with all those headwinds, hurricanes, thunderstorms, etc., etc., the assets that you own in Besant still prevail. You still have them. You know, they haven't gone anywhere. So what price someone is willing to pay for those assets a few months or years down the line is going to be down the line. It's not now.
Kevin, I don't know whether it was actually a senior employee of BHP or an analyst talking about BHP. He said the biggest danger next year is that mining companies start overpaying for assets. Kevin, there is going to be a massive feeding frenzy next year. It's been all about super duper returns and dividends and extra windfall returns that, you know, by the majors. Now they're digging down to reality. Then all of a sudden, you're going to see it in the annual reports. The inventories are low. Copper inventories for the major copper producers, they haven't got enough. And then there will be a search. They'll drop the bar. You know, it's like the Olympics. If number one can't jump over the bar, you drop it a bit. Or when you're on the way up, you lift it a bit, you know. So there we are. We're in an arena now where basically they're thinking about other things. But I'm telling you, and they're telling us as well, Anglo-American are telling us, BHP said, you know, we recognize this need, but we don't want to overpay, or you shouldn't overpay, whether that's an analyst of the company. I can't quite recall. But there's no doubt in my mind, keep going, keep adding value to your copper, your nickel, your EV metal assets. Because I'm sure that 2023 will be see those major companies, and I'm going to stop there and not say not those major mining companies. I see the day, it's already happening, of the end user going direct to mining company. I see that activity, Kevin. I see it growing. I really see it growing, Phil. That's going to happen. It's all right saying, you know, being a big mining company, we won't name them because I don't want to name them. It's not the correct thing to do. But we are looking, you know, the statement, we are looking for tier one copper assets. Tier one being a couple of million tons of contained copper, you know, at an all-up price of $1.20. We're all looking for tier one copper assets.
Yes.
They'll be happy to get, I'm telling you, Kevin, they'll be we happy to get copper assets in 2024. Because if one thing I've learned in life, as need goes up, spec goes down.
No, absolutely.
I've seen it so often.
But I think you're right. I think this gigafactory situation is a whole new economy all of its own. I mean, you've got car manufacturers and gigafactories and hundreds of them. And, you know, we've had this conversation, I think, with Blanco Resources in terms of their graphite as well. So you've got graphite, you've got copper, you've got nickel. You've got all of these different metals that are just a requirement. We don't have
them. It's just not negotiable.
So we've got all of these small cap companies that have got great assets that are sitting there. And because the financial market has basically clamped up just at the minute, especially in terms of funding things, then effectively we've stopped for a period of time. And then when that reopens, then you're going to have to value these assets at a very reasonable price initially, as you said. 2023, the start of maybe people can buy things at a reasonable price. But after that, as things become more and more scarce, yeah, I can see exactly what you're saying, that these assets are going to start to, you know, literally skyrocket because they don't have a choice. They have to have them.
Yeah, and you're so right. You summed it up there. That it's we're in that cycle again that we seem to get in with these major mining companies and they're driven by what's going off in the world. But you're seeing, again, so many short-term decisions against long-term fundamentals. And that always leads to imbalance in asset price and asset purchase price. So, you know, and our sector is generally the beneficiary. So you can see the perfect storm brewing. But, yep. You know, like I say, before we get to the storm, the other side of the storm, the immediate storm It's something to be reckoned with, Kevin. It's something to be reckoned with. But, you know, either you believe in Armageddon or you believe in a new future for us all. And sometimes you have to go through the storm to get to the peace and the good times. So
I'm going to be looking to a new future now. I'm going to be watching Boris waving him off from Balmoral.
I know. That's a new one for us all. And there's how to play the world. Again, if you know, we look at Boris, he didn't cry in his beer. Boris is the eternal thinker and strategist. What did he do? He was very polite to everybody. He continued to do his job to his end. He actually went out with a bow and the best wish to the nation. Sometimes, you know, you have to manage your life. And Boris has managed his exit extremely well. Congratulations to him. And I know this is not a politics program, but I don't think we've seen the last of Boris.
Maybe not. But he did have a nice holiday the last couple of months.
Yeah, well, why not?
Liz Truss is going to be interfering with many things, I think, from this point on, especially the energy crisis. So we'll see how that implies to the market as well. So it's going to be interesting. But
if she announces that what they think they're going to announce within the next couple of days, which is going to be a lot, you know, basically removing the cap or putting a cap on until January at something like £1,800, which is going to have a massive impact, then ultimately it's going to buy a lot of households a lot of time to sort out the finances until until everybody knows what's going on, really. So yeah, I wouldn't want to be walking into this situation she's in with Ukraine and energy crisis and everything else, would you, in this position?
Good Lord, no. I mean, you know, we've been sort of discussing the state of our industry and the threats, but there's better jobs to aspire to than Prime Minister of UK. And I think there's better jobs than chief executive mining companies who know they need that copper. But the explorers would be lifting one eye up very high in the sky if they suddenly announced that they're going to buy a 750,000 ton of copper deposit. They'd think, well, what's going off here? Copper down and starting buying smaller deposits.
And then there's being chairman of one, and then there's being chairman of four or five, isn't there, Colin?
Yeah, there is indeed. But I tell you what, we're in the right space. We've got very good projects. We've got a very good, strong management team. Absolutely no ego in our company whatsoever. We try to well work with our partners. We try to work well with the governments to control our lives. You know, you might think I've been smoking dope. I didn't sleep last night and I'm disorientated. But I'm actually optimistic for the future.
So tell me this, Colin. If a major came to you now and said he wanted all the copper assets that you have within Percent, would you take £10 million for them today?
Good Lord, no.
Why not? The market cap's only 5 million. Why the hell wouldn't you take 10?
Yeah, well, we're not Marks and Spencers. You can buy Marks and Spencers for a premium of their current share price. You can buy Meggitt, the aerospace company, if you like. I don't know if it even exists. It was just a name what came out of the sky. You can buy any sort of cash-producing asset, if you like, factory, clothing, next. There's going to be a bit of a bum fight, I understand, in that space. But the reality is you buy them at 25 to 35% over market cap. But when you're talking about exploration companies, when you talk about pioneers, I'm afraid, and it's like pharmaceuticals, isn't it? It's like pharmaceuticals as well. You don't pay them for their as a premium on their market cap. You've got to recognize all of that value, all of that risk that the original shareholders took to get the company to where it is. And you've got to recognize not what it is, what it's going to be. You know, I discovered the Calambela, the Sentinel mine. That thing's coughing out about $300 billion a quarter, and they paid $265. You might say I undersold it. But of course, it was the right time to exit for our shareholders. And we got what was a sensible price. £10 million is a lot of money. But our shareholders, I think I would probably have to live somewhere in Belize or somewhere, find a place to hide for a few years if I pulled that one.
Indeed. That shows the state of the market at the minute, doesn't it, really? Because basically the assets are not being valued at anywhere near their true value.
Value is a moving feast. And when you're talking about an exploration company, it's perception and belief.
Yeah.
And now we've put the world to right. We've discussed, I think, everything there, politics, everything, ins and outs, junior miners, majors. And yeah, it's a pleasure as always, Colin. Thanks for your time.
No, it's been my pleasure to vent the steam. I sit here in the morning wondering, I wish the share price was up. But, It's no good wishing. Just get on with it.
In the next month or so, Colin, as you know, we're going to start Rose TV production. So I know we've probably all got faces for radio, but we're going to probably be on the TV in the next month or so.
I'll get the suit out and dust it up then if you're going to invite me.
For sure. You're more than welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks, gents. It's always good to talk to you.
Cheers, Colin.
All the best.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.